Hi, I'm Lisa Wexler. I'm your host this morning for the Accorda Scientific Excellence Award, in which every Saturday morning we get to talk to some of our best and brightest students who are studying independently in science research in Fairfield and in Putnam and in Westchester counties. You can find out more about the award by going on to Accorda.com, A-C-O-R-D-A.com. Our chief sponsor is Accorda Therapeutics, a biotechnology company based in Ardsley, New York. This morning, I'm very happy to introduce you to this week's winner from Yorktown High School, Janani Rajadurai. Is that right?
Yes.
So if I just say Janani, are we good?
It's Janani.
Janani?
Yes.
Okay. It's spelled J-A-N-A-N-I.
Yes.
But it's pronounced more like Janani?
Yeah.
Got it. Perfect. All right. And Janani, congratulations.
Thank you so much.
So tell us, what was the subject of your research? What were you trying to do?
So essentially, my project tries to address the opioid epidemic in the United States. So opioid overdose death rates are increasing exponentially, and that's a real problem because opioids are used as painkillers. So the most common one being morphine, and morphine is very useful in treating heart attack victims, car accident victims, but it's associated with several adverse effects, including respiratory depression, constipation, nausea, and severe drug dependence. So what my study tried to look at is to not find a replacement for morphine, but reduce the amount of time it takes to find a replacement for morphine.
So, okay, a couple of things. First of all, isn't morphine... is morphine OxyContin?
No, it's not.
Okay. So is morphine available outside of a hospital setting?
In special cases, I think, but not often. It has to be prescribed to you. And the death rates that are associated with the opioid epidemic, it mostly has to do with prescription painkillers. So people are overdosing on drugs that have been prescribed to them.
Right, but is morphine ever prescribed outside a hospital setting? Isn't it? Aren't the drugs that are prescribed the OxyContin drugs?
It depends on what kind of pain you're experiencing. So, you could be prescribed OxyContin. You could be prescribed morphine. It depends on what your doctor's diagnosis is, but a lot of these drugs have these very adverse effects that my research is trying to circumvent.
Okay. And so tell me a little bit. So you started by saying that you think that, just frame it again for me. What is it that you were trying to have happen out in the marketplace to prevent more opioid overdoses?
So my research was focused on creating an algorithm that can distinguish between two classes of drugs, essentially. So it takes 10 to 15 years for a drug to finally reach its commercial stage. So that includes preclinical trials, clinical trials, FDA approval, all of that.
And that's if you're lucky.
Yes, exactly. So, and along the way, things get dropped, obviously.
Right. And they fail.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's what those steps are for, because if they don't test it, then it'll fail on the actual patient.
Right.
So these studies start with huge sets of drugs that are narrowed down in each of these stages.
Okay.
So instead of selecting from this huge pool of drugs, my research tries to create an algorithm that we can identify a class of a drug right away, right off the bat, and computationally. So you don't have to proceed to the experimental stage before realizing, oh, this is not the drug that we want.
That's okay. Is this a whole new branch of science that we're talking about here?
I'm not sure what you mean.
Well, it sounds like if this kind of thing could have been done in the past, it would have been done, right?
Yes.
So why can it be done now but it couldn't be done in the past?
So advances in artificial intelligence and machine learning is what allows things like this to happen. And so the specific method we used is a deep neural network. And that's a fairly new methodology that's being used, especially
a deep
neural network, DNN.
DNN.
Yeah.
Deep neural network.
Yeah.
DNN. Okay.
Yeah. So what a neural network is, it's for my purposes, it was classifying certain features of each of the drugs or, can I say ligands? Ligands or?
No.
Okay.
Nobody knows what it is.
Okay.
You could say it, but then you have to define it.
Okay. So a ligand is a small molecule.
L-I-G-A-N-D.
Yes. It's a small molecule that binds to a target, which is a receptor. So
okay.
I'll be calling drugs ligands from
okay,
now.
Okay, really?
Yeah, for this study.
So a drug, okay. Let's go back a little bit, Jenny,
okay.
because I think I'm way too what they call in the weeds. Let's go back a little bit. You did this research at Mount Sinai.
Yeah.
Okay. And the research, the general category of the research you call computer technology. Science and computer technology, and you use a word that we hadn't seen used before called pharmacophore.
Yes.
Is that the way you pronounce it?
Pharmacophore, yes.
Pharmacophore. What is a pharmacophore?
So in context, it's called a pharmacophore model. So a pharmacophore model is when you basically take a ligand and you, a small molecule, and you...
It's a small molecule.
Yes.
Okay.
And you create this, essentially a map of the important features of each of the ligands.
Of the molecule itself.
Yeah.
You're creating a map.
Yeah. So in a pharmacophore model, each of the important structural components of each of the ligands are stored as coordinates. So the model will contain a data string of each of the coordinates of each of those points.
So now you're into math.
Yeah.
So your project really was a cross-section of a lot of different disciplines.
Yes, it was.
Of math and science put together
in
order to move forward with what you originally said, trying to figure out a way to assess early on what possible drugs would be used in an effective way towards a certain problem.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a global conversation, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, and just trying to bring it back so that we understand it. You did a lot of math and you did a lot of science to isolate, data to be able to give to a machine in a program so it would then spit out what molecules were likely to respond to a certain drug versus what molecules were not likely to respond to the drug?
It spit out whether the ligand that was passed in was either class A or class B.
Okay, and what's the difference between A or B?
So class A was agonist class, and then class B was an antagonist.
Okay.
So an agonist is a ligand that binds to a receptor, and it activates the receptor, so it triggers some response.
Okay.
An antagonist will block the activity of an agonist. So essentially blocking the activity of the receptor itself.
So depending upon what you want this drug to do, that's very important information to have.
Mm-hmm.
And how did you learn how to do all of this math and science?
So a lot of help came from my mentor, Dr. Davide Pravasi.
Is he at Mount Sinai?
Yeah, he is. He's an assistant professor. So he's very knowledgeable. And I actually did my first research project was last year, and then this is the second research project. So they were different projects, but I remember walking in the first day and I knew the biology side of things because I had read several journal articles produced by him and colleagues who are in that similar field. But in terms of the computational work, I didn't know much. So he provided me with a lot of tutorials. And the math and coding part that was really difficult, he actually did some of it. So that was really helpful because I wouldn't have been able to do the entire project if he hadn't taken over in those segments.
So there was a lot to learn here.
Yeah, it was.
It was a lot to learn. And when you were in was it a lab that you were in?
Yeah, it was what's called a dry lab.
What's that?
A dry lab is basically all computers.
No mice.
No mice. No, nothing is alive except for the humans in it.
Okay.
Yeah. A wet lab is where it's like the where you see the mad scientists in lab coats with
and the mice
test tubes, yeah,
right. Mm-hmm. So the dry lab only has computers, and is that the lab of the future, Jenny?
In some ways, yes. I think a lot more of the drug process is done computationally.
We won't have to experiment on animals maybe as much.
Yeah, that's true. Also, but there is an experimental component that goes with this because things in the computer world are idealized.
True.
So
without, still have to test it on a living organism.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but maybe not as many.
Yeah, that is true.
So in a way, some of this AI, a lot of people are afraid of it.
Mm-hmm.
But if it skips a lot of the very tedious steps that we could not have to put animals through, it would be a good thing.
Mm-hmm.
It would be a very good thing.
Yeah.
We're talking with Jenny. Let me get this right. Rajadarai?
Rajadarai, yes.
Rajadarai. Where are you from, Jenny?
I was born in White Plains.
Okay.
But my parents are from India.
From India. What
yes.
part of India?
It's called Tamil Nadu. It's in the south of India.
What language is it that you speak so well or with such a nice accent?
Oh, thank you. It's Tamil.
What's it? Oh, Tamil?
Yeah, T-A-M-I-L.
T-A-M-I-L. Do you speak that at home?
It's kind of complicated. It's like a mix of different languages. It's like a dialect, I guess. So it's not pure Tamil, but I can understand pure Tamil well.
And do your parents speak that to each other?
Yes, they do.
That's a very cool thing.
Yeah,
it's nice to be able to speak. Now, do you read and write it also?
I can kind of read it. I've started to try to pick up. I actually was in India 2 weeks ago.
To visit family?
Yeah, and I was trying to read street signs. And I can write my name, my sister's name.
that's very cool.
Yeah.
And are the letters, are they the ABCs or is it a different, are they different letters?
No, they're different letters. It's not like Spanish where it's the same letters,
right.
But different. It's
different.
Yeah. You put together sounds and consonants, so it's a different setup.
That's very cool.
Yeah.
So, Jenny, we'll be right back. We're chatting with Jenny about a pharmacophore modeling approach to examining a specific opioid receptor molecule for pain management therapeutics. And we'll get into the importance of this research coming right up. I'm Lisa Wexler. Thanks for listening this morning. You're listening to the Acorda Scientific Excellence Award.
Are you looking to cut costs without sacrificing quality? If so, Onboard Services is waiting for you. Onboard Services takes the administrative hassle of running a business off your hands. From payroll to benefit plans, hiring, and outplacement, Onboard does it all. Onboard has trained specialists to provide your organization with employees based on the skill sets you desire. A family-run business for over 40 years, including clientele among Fortune 400 companies, Onboard is experienced in over 100 disciplines. For temporary and long-term help, or if you just want to save money without dismissing your current employees, do what the experts do. Call Onboard Services right now. Call 609-945-8009. That's 609-945-8009 or on the web at www.obcc.net. For a special offer, mention WGCH. Take the hassle out of running your business so you can concentrate on the bottom line. Call Onboard Services today.
Having a child with a learning disability is not easy. Winston Prep knows that. Until now, when your son or daughter was ready for high school, you've had few choices. Either send him away to boarding school, where he'll get that special attention he needs, or you take a shot at the local public high school, where you'll spend so much time trying to get them to provide enough support. But now there's another option. The Winston Prep School, located right in Norwalk. Winston Prep School is the only day high school for kids with learning disabilities. Actually, they started grade 6 going through grade 12. Every child benefits from the Focus program, a daily one-on-one instructional session. Winston's highly trained teachers instruct kids with both language-based and nonverbal learning disabilities. If you're a parent who wakes up every morning and says, "What can I do today to make my kid's life a little better, to increase her chances of success?" then give Winston Prep a call at 203-229-0465. That's 203-229-0465. Or sign up for one of their upcoming open houses. Winston Prep may be the answer you've been looking for.
Hi, I'm Lisa Wexler. Join us every weekday on this station between 4 and 6 o'clock p.m. Hey, if you're thinking about it, we're talking about it. We're listening to what's happening in our community, and we want to hear from you as well. We talk politics, science, and the arts. We consult with experts, and we want your opinion. So join us every weekday. I'm Lisa Wexler right here at 1490 WGCH and WGCH.com anywhere. And welcome back. You are listening to the Accorda Scientific Excellence Award, and joining us this morning is Jenity Rajadurai of Yorktown High School, this week's winner. Jenity has won the award for a project that looks at a brand new word, pharmacophore, modeling approach to examining opioid receptor molecules. So we'll get a little bit into that. You did that at Mount Sinai, correct?
That's correct.
So yes. Again, a quick definition for those just tuning in. Pharmacophore modeling means what?
So a pharmacophore model is what I like to think of as a three-dimensional map of a small molecule, which we call a ligand.
Okay.
And so the model will store the coordinates of the important structural components of each of the ligands as a data point.
So a pharmacophore model would be something that I would look at on a computer screen?
Mm-hmm.
And would it look like a three-dimensional view of a molecule?
Yes.
And when you say it contains a map of information, if I look at it, let's say I'm looking at a cube's shape. I'm just making something up. Within the sides of the cube, is there information contained literally to look at, or would more be like on the bottom of the screen collected about it? How does it look?
When you look at it visually,
yeah.
You would have to use an application to view it.
Okay.
It's called Maestro. That's the application that we use to view it. So it just looks like a three-dimensional model. Like, you'll see, like, a cube and then, like, probably the vertices of the cube.
Uh-huh.
And then, but when you store it as a file and
yes.
you view the file,
right.
you'll see, like, X and then the coordinate, Y coordinate. And it'll be have that for each of the points.
And so why is a pharmacophore model, how is that helpful towards the advancement of knowledge?
So the thing about a pharmacophore model is that it stores these coordinates, which can then be converted into something that a machine learning algorithm can read.
Oh, okay. And then what can the machine learning algorithm do with that data?
So in terms of my project, it's able to look at the specific attributes of each of the drugs and say, okay, class A of this type of drug has these types of structural components in common, and it's located at this general region. So class A tends to have that type of structure. And then class B will probably have some similarities with other structural components and their arrangement within that coordinate.
So can it match? So if you take a pharmacophore model to a specific molecule
mm-hmm.
and you create a map of that, and then you've got this drug on the side,
mm-hmm.
are you able to, with AI, with artificial intelligence, look at the, as a mathematical thing, look at these coordinates and see whether or not it's going to sort of fit?
Yeah, so that's the whole thing with classifying it. So the thing with the deep neural network is that it trains this machine learning model to recognize the similarities between all class A ligands and then similarities between all class B ligands. So then when you have this new drug that you want to test, you put it through the algorithm and it'll spit out, this is class A or this is class B.
And that'll be helpful because?
Because it tells scientists what type of drug it is. So they can either say, I want this in my study, or I don't want this in my study, and that's right off the bat. So that doesn't even, you don't even have to go through experimental testing to figure out what class of drug it is.
That's pretty cutting edge stuff.
Mm-hmm.
That's really very cool. I think so. I think it's really very cool. Now, you write that your research will revolutionize pain management. How do we get to the practical import of what you did? Why do you make the statement that the kind of research you did can revolutionize pain management?
Yeah, so my statement in saying that was a lot of emphasis on computational pharmacology is that it's in the beginning stages of the pharmacological process. So the applications aren't as direct as they would be if I was conducting my research in the experimental stage. Right?
Okay.
Because this is very preliminary.
Right.
But if the computational aspect is, if we can accomplish a lot more in the computational stage, then that means the amount of time that these studies have to spend in the experimental and clinical trial stage can be narrowed down.
Can be narrowed down. They can be squashed. So if you, and specifically, are you talking about the creation of the of compounds that will help the brain get off of opiates? Is that specifically what you're talking about here?
This type of study can cater to classifying whatever types of drugs you want. So if you're looking for a drug that will reverse the effects of morphine, you would want an antagonist because morphine is an agonist.
Okay.
So an antagonist.
I take your word for it.
Morphine is an agonist. So the antagonist will block the activity of morphine.
And you know what you're looking for and that would work.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And so is this the kind of technology, I'm just thinking, is this the kind of technology that you would want to see a lot of biotechnology companies used in terms of what developing what they think are new drugs to treat all kinds of diseases?
Yeah, I think so, because like computational pharmacology isn't just limited to classifying drugs. You can test, you can simulate the actions of drugs within a virtual setting.
Wow.
Yeah. So there's something called molecular dynamics, where you literally take a drug and you simulate it in the atmosphere of the neuron or something like that. And then you can see, when it's in this environment, the drug behaves this way. And that can, I mean, it won't be or may not be 100% spot on, but it gives you a preview into what the drug might, what activity it might take on in the experimental and clinical setting.
And again, it's much faster because if you're doing experimentation, you usually have to wait a lot longer as a practical matter for approvals, but also to see how something develops in the organism.
Yes.
So this is pretty exciting. Have you always been interested in science, Jenny?
Yeah, I have. I love biology, but I never saw medicine as a career for me. I think just because being a doctor is not what I envisioned for myself, but I really like studying the subject. I'm very much a computer science person.
I can see that.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah.
And I like the coding aspect of things, especially when it has these humanitarian impacts. Coding just to code is not the most exciting thing, I don't think, for anyone. You want to have a purpose with your algorithms, because otherwise you're just sitting there typing.
I'm just curious, Jenny, in the world in which you're living in today, when you say coding, do you start with the zeros and the ones and learn how to code from that basic a concept, or are you already so far ahead when people are learning coding today? Do they still learn with the zeros and the ones?
Yeah, I actually started learning computer science a year and a half ago.
That's all?
Yeah. So when I started doing it, I just took this free online course and I really liked it. I took a web design course when I was in like eighth grade, and I would just like copy and paste what the internet was saying into my work. But I started to look at what like coding languages can really do. And then I started to look more into it. And then when I got to pick a topic to do my research in, I knew I liked biology, but I didn't know if I wanted to be in a wet lab setting. But I also wanted to do computer science. Not because I'm good at it or because I already know it. It's because I wanted to know more. So immersing myself in that setting was something that was really beneficial for my knowledge of the application of computer science.
And it's relatively new that you would have been able to make such a marriage, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so that's why I was saying that my mentor helped a lot with the machine learning part of the experiment.
Yeah.
So that, I mean, I would sit with him when he was writing it, but he helped a lot with that.
So are you a senior now or a junior?
I'm a senior.
Are you going to continue with the study, this cross-combination of various aspects of science when you go to college?
I think so. For me, I don't really have a preference as to what the application is, as long as there is an application.
It's very cool. It's a little bit, I mean, over my head, Janity, I have to tell you. But what I'm trying to understand abstractly is that there is a synthesis, right, mm-hmm. between computer technology, which is a lot of what is AI, and biology itself. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's very cool. I mean, it's unusual that none of the judges, and we have a lot of judges that are scientists mm-hmm. and retired science teachers, mm-hmm. and I'm the layperson, so it's not unusual for me. But it's unusual for the rest of the other judges to never have heard of a word.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why I'm focusing on this word pharmacophore, because we've never seen it before.
Yeah. It's very specific to the tool that I used for my study. Unless you did a project in the exact same environment that I did, I feel like it'd be very hard to come across that word.
And you had a specific hypothesis. Did your research support or disprove your hypothesis?
So I read an article about using machine learning with pharmacophore modeling, and their research was pretty successful. So I hypothesized that my algorithm would be pretty accurate. And we achieved a 97% accuracy, which was a little bit surprising because
it's very high.
It's very high.
Very.
And it's the first time that something like that using pharmacophore modeling has
ever happened.
Yeah.
Yeah. So your mentor must have been very pleased.
Yeah.
Yeah. Very, very pleased. Well, it's really a pleasure to have met you this morning, Janity.
Thank you so much for having me.
I'm Lisa Wexler. You've been listening to the Acorda Scientific Excellence Award. To find out more about this, you only need to be somebody, a student in high school in the area who is independently studying in engineering, science, technology, or math, you know, one of the STEM areas. And the application is free. And we encourage you to continue to apply during this school year of 2019. You can find out more about the application at acorda.com, acorda.com. Congratulations to you. How's our Michael Blueglass doing?
Oh, he's great.
He's great. Yeah. Send our love.
Yeah, I have another teacher too, actually, Miss Rachel Konigstein.
Oh, yes?
Yeah, so there's two teachers in the program.
It's a wonderful program.
Yeah, thank you so much.
Wonderful program. Thank you, Janity. Congratulations again.
Thank you.